Our next storyteller is a longtime fixture here at Frey, a tremendous supporter of what happens here every year at Frey Cafe. He's hard to miss because he always dresses as if he's come straight off the plane from his native land, and does, but he also spends a lot of time all over the world in many other places. He always provides a huge contribution here to at Frey. Would you please welcome Ewan Spence?
This is a story about how my grandfather taught me about death. Hello, I'm Ewan Spence. Those long-termers at Frey who are expecting a barnstormer come back next year, okay? By all means, tweet, but if we could keep the salient details of this one between us. Can we all agree to that? Lovely. No problem. So, this isn't a cancer story, although it does have a passing role in a walk-on part. My grandmother died 15 years ago now, mostly from cancer riddling throughout her entire body, but the main cause was a cancer of the small gap between her eye and her brain. We eventually discovered that it was about the size of a baseball. So give that a go sometime. My grandfather hung around for another 5 years, and then he died, mostly with a body riddled of cancer, put down there as cancer of the lung. And I want to talk about him just now. Now, the strange thing is, he wasn't my grandfather. Now, I don't mean that in the biological sense. In the biological sense, he was my grandfather. He fathered my dad fathered me, and until there's an episode of Tootsie coming out on television, that's how it's going to be. But at the same time, I come from, how to describe where I come from? You have Edinburgh in Scotland, and then you have like Dundee and Aberdeen and the rest of the cities, and then you have a little runty, sticky out bit between them. That's where I come from. It's called Fife, and it has the most coarsest, obscure dialect of Scots English you have ever heard. It sounds nothing like this, if you wanted an example. It's perfectly legible to everybody in Fife. And they're not called grandfather and grandmother, or gran and granddad. It's gran and di, D-I. I have no idea why, but it just is. When I was growing up, it's gran and di. My daughters now, my mum and dad are their gran and di. Simple as that. So my dad taught me a lot of lessons in life. Like grandparents do, they don't actually sit you down and teach you a lesson. They're sneaky. They're playful about it. It's almost as if somebody's given them permission to do it again, but without any of the sort of responsibility. My dad taught me about mutually assured destruction when I was 7. He did this because on a Saturday morning when I went down to visit, he had, on his pride and joy, his video recorder, a war film with bombers and Russians and strange men in wheelchairs and lots of explosions and 50s music. And it was about 10 years later, because I never actually saw the first half hour of the film, that I discovered that he'd showed me Dr. Strangelove. And that was a revelation for me. But at the time, I just thought, nuclear war, yeah, that's not a good idea. And he loved that video recorder. It was huge. You see how big this stage is? That's how big video recorders were in those days. It was a Betamax. It had an eject button that had never heard of the physics principle of leverage. It was a top loader. It's a top loader. You literally had to put your whole weight on this eject button. And the tape would come up. Well, it kind of would go, just go, ding. He taught me about the value of money. I didn't think it was the value of money. It was me thinking, well, how what sweets do I need to buy to make this 10p, it's about a dime, last as long as possible? He just gave me the money. I worked out the rest myself. He taught me the wonders of being addicted to a science fiction program and picking up and trying to avoid spoilers. It's 1984. The Summer Olympic. I'll get shot for that in London, which is handy. The Summer Olympics of 1984. Who can remember them? Wow, almost everybody. Basically, it was like a week of grown men and women running around Los Angeles. And in the UK, our main station, the BBC, was broadcasting it wall to wall. Over on the second channel, ITV, they decided to do something different because they didn't have the Olympics. So they decided to strip the miniseries V. You know, who remembers? Yeah. Essentially, they were programming opposite the Olympics, lots of grown men and women running around Los Angeles. It's like three people got that, but I'm a geek and I don't care. That's enough for me. But it was on incredibly, incredibly late. It started at 11. It was running at 11 p.m. till 1 a.m. on a Monday to Friday. No way was I getting to watch that. 10 hours, 5 nights, 1 week, no. Then about a week or two later, I discovered that my day had sacrificed his 2 Betamax blank tapes and went out and bought another 2, which in those days was about the price of a Chevy Volt. So he taped them all for me. And I went down early one Sunday morning. We watched all 10 hours together in one sitting. He taught me a lot. Let's bring this up to date a little bit. Before my gran died, my girlfriend then, who was eventually to become my fiance and is now still my wife, I was really glad that she met my gran and my dad as well. Because my gran just knew that that's it. That's the one. I'm going to marry her. She's part of the family. Doesn't matter about the paperwork or anything. She's here. And it's wrong to say that my gran's death didn't affect me. It was just, that's how life is. You go through the funeral as you do. You go through the thinking afterwards as you do. And you move on. After I proposed to Vicky, she said yes, by the way. We set a date. We set a date for the wedding. This would be 25th of March 2001. Before I discovered South By and how much problems that date would cause. But my diet at this point is seriously dying. The last year of his life had no quality. He was bedridden. He didn't want to accept any help. Very, very proud man. His entire body not working. And even though we had the best wedding we could planned and all the dates and everything, we actually agreed that if he was to go downhill really fast, we'd just run in and get a bit of paper. Because it was important to me, important to Vicky, that he actually saw us married. Even though he knew, it was just, there was just the connection, and you need to know. So he did stay alive for the wedding. He didn't make it to the wedding. At that point, he was in respite care with tubes, needles, machines that go ping, drifting in and out. By this point, Vicky and I are living in London. So when we've come up to Edinburgh to get married, and we're having our honeymoon in the north of Scotland. The rest of our family was convinced that what they should do was try and save up money to send us somewhere hot. And we're like, no, we're Scottish, we're going to have our honeymoon in Scotland. Besides, we haven't been there for 2 years. So when we drive away the next day from the hotel, we're able to stop off and see my dad on the way up as we go to the north of Scotland to have our honeymoon. We're able to take all the flowers and the cabbage leaves from the wedding because he was a gardener. He didn't want flowers in his garden. He wanted stuff that he could eat. He wanted practical things. And we took them to him, and he mostly drugged up, but we were able to get a couple of moments with him and say, here's the rings. We're married. And he smiled. And I was as happy as happy can be in a situation like that. We carried on with the honeymoon. It was just a week. Came back after the week, popped in, said hi again. But there was nothing there. We drove back to London. 2 days after that, my dad calls. And I already know what's happened because my dad doesn't call. He's that sort of man, doesn't talk about anything. It's always my mum makes the calls. So I know he's died. And he tells me. He hasn't left much in his life. It's a rented house, government pension. You know, he'd worked in the army, then as a plasterer, then moved on to retire on state benefits. The money he had left was for the funeral and to get Vicky and myself back up from London. And then that was the money gone. So we came back up. Now, I've done a reading at the funeral for all my grandparents. And the other funerals, yeah, sure, they were hard. Sure, there was a tightness of the throat and, you know, it's tough. But this one was different. This one really sat heavily in my throat. You know, legs not wanting to move. And I have no idea what the reading was. And actually, I can only remember one of them from all of my grandparents. But I somehow got through. You know, and whether it was because I was getting older and, you know, these sort of things prey on the mind of a newly married man, it was starting to change. It was really starting to affect me. And got through the reading. And then the congregation are asked to sing a song. And that song was The Old Rugged Cross. And it's a song that my gran and my dad always listened to. It's on the radio almost every Sunday night on the local stations. And that hurt. Not in a sort of, oh, I miss them hurt. In a sort of, we're going to just pump your chest full of heart. And I cry. And I don't mean sort of cry that you'd normally expect. I mean real, entire body shaking, outpouring, no control, completely bust open. And this goes through the rest of the service. I kind of do it quietly because that's what men do in Fife. And I get back to the house, and it's just not stopped. It is unlocked, and it's not like grief I have had before. You know, looking back now, with far more years of experience and time to think about it, it was the first moment of true grief. And I'm in the rented house, which means that in a couple of days' time, it's going to be handed back to the council, and another family is going to get it. So all that growing up, the sweets, the videos, everything is going to go. This is it. It's a hard stop on everything that's in this place. And my mum turns to me and says, "Don't be silly. Pull yourself together and stop crying." Which I do for 3 years. Not solidly 3 years. Because if you keep shaking a champagne bottle, if you keep putting popcorn into a hot pan, if you keep throwing water down 6th Street in a monsoon condition that makes me feel like home, it's going to spill out. There's silly moments, silly like going through old Christmas cards, you can turn them into tags on presents. It was enough to destroy me for 2 hours, and I would just have to sit on the floor and melt. I couldn't go to the graveside. If I got within, you know, recognition distance of it, game over. Wasn't able to do anything. Hitting memories would just see me stop. Because you keep it in, because you can hide. Because the only bit of guidance I ever had was don't be silly. And this is where my wife. This is why my wife is my wife, and why I love her, and hopefully why she loves me. If she knows this is wrong, she knows it's the wrong reaction. This is not how you deal with death, because it's not dealing with death. And she had to recognize it, because, you know, it would only pop up occasionally in those 3 years, but when it did, it was a tsunami. And we eventually, together, got to a psychologist, and we got some help. I say we got some help. Essentially, I just sat there crying a lot, and Vicky told the story that I'm telling you now. In fact, that I can tell it now. Well, something helped there. It was as if somebody gave me permission. Somebody outside the family was basically, no, this is fine. This is what you do. This is how you grieve. This is death. This is life. Life is death. Death is life. And they are all one. And I moved on. And it still hurts. You know, right now, you would not be surprised how heavy I am in here. My dad taught me many things. I have a 7-year-old and a 9-year-old daughter, and very soon they are going to have to realize that life includes death. And there is, for the parents in here, you'll know there is no handbook, there is no handy dummy's guide to getting it right. You just don't know how. You have to take experience from your elders. And as he died, and beyond, my dad gave me his final lesson, which was death. I'm George Spence's grandson.
Ewan Spence, everybody. That's why we're here.